If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Wanted to let you know that the Sound Stream is now available exclusively on the Sound app. You can now listen 24/7 to a music stream featuring jam bands and more, much more. So not just what you'd expect, but a few surprises along the way too. Curated by the Sound Media Team, the stream offers up your favorite songs by your favorite bands and artists, both live and in the studio. We'll also be adding specialty programming and much more. So get it today and listen wherever you want for free. Get the app for iOS and Android by searching for The Sound Podcast and Stream or at app.thesoundmedia.com. Just hit the orange button, press play, and boogie on. The show starts now.
Hey, baby, let's go dancing in the street. People that we meet, oh, not need what you say, my darling. Fire water strong, baby, pass that thing along. Or run, engines come.
Mardi Gras,
Golden Eagles way uptown, big teeth and a golden crown.
Mardi Gras,
we're all dancing in the sun to the beat of the big drum. Hey baby, love that dress you wear, feet banging in your hair.
You've been listening to Mardi Gras off of John Papagros' soon-to-be-released record, Central City. It's his third solo record after fronting Papagros Funk in the early part of the century. With some heavy hitters from the New Orleans scene joining him on the record, it's a conversation I've been looking forward to for quite some time. John Papagros is amongst probably the next line of musicians coming out of New Orleans that really pays close attention to the heritage of the New Orleans music scene. Like other musicians from that town, few hesitate to be ambassadors for the city. Our conversation started when I asked John what it is about New Orleans that makes everyone want to be an ambassador for Central City.
I mean, just being in New Orleans is just it's a great spot. The people are so wonderful. It starts with families and neighborhoods, and then everybody is a friend. And when you're a good friend, you become a part of a family, and that just, grows and just gets larger exponentially. And that comes out in our food and our music and the way we just live life. And as far as the ambassador part, I never really thought much about that. I know, growing up, Dr. John was always like the number one ambassador for me. But when Katrina and the devastation of our federal failures of the levees and wiped out New Orleans, and, people were saying New Orleans wasn't worth rebuilding, all of a sudden, here I am going all over the world realizing that I'm trying to save my city. I'm trying to save my culture, save where I come from, but also by promoting what I do. And then, it dawned on me really early in those days that I am an ambassador. I mean, I live my life in New Orleans. I'm cooking all the time. I'm working on music. I'm celebrating, everything that goes on around here and helping other people do the same. So I just kind of assume the role. But it's an easy sell. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Whether it's Anders Osborne or George Porter Jr., who of course you've played with and have a long history with, but it just seems to me that there is all of the musicians from New Orleans are just very proud of the city that they live in and like to share in the history and the stories of that city. And I've never made it there, but it's always been a place where I want to get to because everybody speaks so highly of it, both from a food point of view and a music point of view, two of my favorite things. So I need to make my way down there eventually.
Yeah, when you think of New Orleans, I mean, it really is the birthplace of American music. It's where the European traditions came from and mixed with the African traditions. It all happened in New Orleans, how the two combined and integrated, the cultures came together. It all happened here. And then, when you extrapolate that and you just follow the lineage, then you're talking about Buddy Bolden and you're talking about Louis Armstrong. You're talking about Toots Washington, Professor Longhair, Fats Domino. And then from there, you go with Alan Toussaint, Dr. John, Pete Fountain gets thrown into the mix. Al Hurt gets thrown into the mix. Irma Thomas. You have the Meters, Art Neville. Then, with the Neville brothers, it's like it's a proud lineage. I mean, nothing but great things have come out of this lineage. It's changed the world time and time again. Louis Armstrong changed the world. Fats Domino changed the world. Wynton Marsalis has changed the whole shape of modern jazz, with his work at promoting New Orleans music. I mean, New Orleans has changed the world in so many ways through our music and our food. I mean, when you think about the food aspect, Chef Paul Prudhomme, when he made his blackening season, started blackening fish and shrimp, that changed the world. As simple as that. The way Ella Brennan at Commander's Palace, how she ran her kitchen and made people feel like, you're coming into her home to celebrate your events, changed mm-hmm. the whole service industry. This is what New Orleans has offered to the whole world. And yeah, I'm proud of it. And everybody else is too. But it's tough, living up to that because you want to be a part of it and you want to continue it.
Well, you certainly pay homage to Central City with this new record that's out April 17th called Central City. It's your third solo record. And it is the next chapter or the latest chapter in your lifelong tribute to the city. What's interesting about this record is your old boss joins you. George Porter Jr. is one of the players. He plays bass on the record. Herlin Riley, who's played with Wynton Marsalis, and trumpeter Mark Broad is on the record. How hard is it for you to gather these folks to create a band to put on the record?
I mean, the hardest part was just getting schedules together. For fun in the studio time, you know, trying to get enough days blocked in the studio, and then trying to get all the musicians in the same building at the same time. I think Herlin came straight from Cuba. I think he got in like midnight the night before, and, you know, he was in the studio ready to play about 10 a.m. And I think we had to fudge one day because he had to split for do some kind of master class, I think at Tulane or Loyola or something like that, on another day. So we were doing horn overdubs. Luckily, for me, I think Harry Connick Jr.'s TV show had kind of fallen out of, or was just off taping or had got canceled. So luckily, Mark Breaux was home. It just, all those pieces, you know what? It just kind of magically just happened. So just it was the scheduling. But once I knew exactly what I was going for. I wanted a traditional sound in New Orleans record, really to pay homage to the tradition. And these were the people that had to be on the record. You know, so like making sure that Herlin was on it, George was on it. I mean, can't be understated that Don Vappy's contribution to the sound on banjo really highlights and really right. makes it authentic. To be able to take some of these songs that have been heard in its original format and put into this new alive, you know, new version of it. Don Vappy's contribution is critical to me. And, you know, luckily he was available and he teaches at Loyola University. So luckily he was able to rearrange his day to make these days happen. So, yeah, we're very fortunate to get that kind of cast of characters in one room.
Yeah, absolutely. You do mention in the song You Do It, it really is about mentioning Dr. John and Zigaboo and the Mississippi River all in one catchy chorus. I mean, if there was one song on the record that encapsulates the whole thing, it is You Do It, right?
It really is. You know, it's a love song, but it's a really, you know, a love song to New Orleans. And, you know, just those lines, you heal my soul like the doctor do. I mean, I've been hearing fans say that for years. And so it just kind of came out. And then when I was with my writing partner, Mark Carson, you know, he's trying all the different other kind of things. I'm like, no, if we're going to start with Dr. John, we're going to go right down the list. And it just came to me, you know, Zigaboo. I don't know if people really know his name, Joseph Moto East. Well, you know, his moniker is Zigaboo, but the drummer from the Meters, you know his sound on hit records. You know, he's been played on hundreds of hit records over decades. And, you know, it's just when you know what his drum sound is about and how a heart beats, it's all out of whack. And that's just like being in love for sure.
Dr. John has played an incredibly significant role as a mentor to you, either, and I don't know if this is direct or just by osmosis and listening to his records, but, you know, as somebody who plays piano, how important was Dr. John in the career of John Grow?
He's at the top of the list, without a doubt. Art Neville is almost right up there. But as far as Dr. John is a guy who probably heard and knew more about earlier on than Art Neville. I'm talking about, you know, when I was probably early teens, if not younger than that. You know, and just the way that he carried himself. He was funny looking, funny sounding. And very, you know, I say funny, not in a derogatory way, but more like just very unique sounding. He always stood out in a crowd. He was easy to pick out on records and videos and pictures. And there was just something captivating about his sound to me that really got inside of me that I wanted to emulate. And so, you know, big part of my playing, the style is wrapped around that. And then all that's, you know, through osmosis and indirectly, you know, learning records, hearing his music all over town, just, you know, it just creeps in through you. But as I got to be, you know, working professional musician in New Orleans and getting to interact with a lot of people, then, you know, I got to be you know, a student of his, and you know, indirect friend. But we spent, you know, spent some time talking. He was very kind to me, very encouraging, which always felt good. And I could say the same thing for Alan Toussaint, although I only got to be really close with Alan probably in his last 3 years of his life. But, you know, both of those are just great mentors that let me know I was on the right path doing the right things. And, you know, another thing that was very special about Dr. John really was the guy who connected all the dots of New Orleans, be it the trad jazz to the blues, through the rock and roll, to the funk. He really was the guy who could play it all, understand it all, and share it and put it in a context that many generations could understand and develop, you know, for me, and then take it and develop into something else. And it's just critical, from, you know, that he's the guy to emulate. Like, he's the guy who put all the pieces together and carried it forward. And he had a lot of help. Alan Toussaint was a master at helping him along his career, and a good friend. Art Neville was a good friend. You know, Mac was the guy. He was the guy from Fitz Washington, Professor Longhair, Fats Domino, all the way to the end. He had it all.
You mentioned Alan Toussaint, somebody who is obviously legendary. You cover a song on the record by Alan Toussaint. Is the approach difficult because he is so legendary that you want to pay homage, but you also want to make it your own?
I don't know, because that version, I actually came up with that version in the mid-90s before I met Alan. When I was really starting to study songwriting and study his songwriting. The only difficult thing was just making sure that I was true to the song. And I was very fortunate later on when I got to meet Alan and we get to share and talk about songs, that's really all he ever cared about was the song and making the song alive and that it connected with the artist. And so my version of that song kind of came out of the desire of, like, all right, here's this classic song that Irma Thomas sang. And it's kind of a bluesy song, but in the original version, it doesn't necessarily sound too bluesy to me. Although she definitely sings it with some heartache. And it's sung from a woman's perspective. You know, when I was as a student, of songs, I was learning, you know, here's this person, Naomi Neville, who wrote all these classic New Orleans songs. And then I come to find out, well, that was Alan Toussaint's mom, and he used her name as a pseudonym. And so it was really Alan Toussaint. Well, when I was studying the lyrics to this song, I was like, man, this is a heartbreak song. And it makes sense that Irma Thomas is singing it, but it was really written from the male perspective. Why isn't there a version? Alan's never really performed it until later on in his years. He never recorded it. Only Irma recorded that song. So I was like, I want to approach this from the male perspective. And so after, you know, I came up with this arrangement in the mid-90s. I've been playing it off and on, I guess, 20-some-odd years by now. And so this is where... In Central City, when I record it, this is where it's at today.
The other people that you also cover on the record are Lloyd Price and John Prine. And John Prine is a bit of a different songwriter for you and a different kind of performer. You wouldn't expect John Prine necessarily to make the list of things that John Groh is listening to. What made you decide to cover John Prine?
There's a bunch of things with the choice of John Prine. I spent 12 years playing on Bourbon Street at a place called the Tropical Isle. And the bulk of that time, I was strumming an acoustic guitar, singing 70s folk rock. And one of the groups that I played with, I was playing keys when I started. I was playing with two guitar players. The band was called Late As Usual. And we did everything kind of 70s folk rock and some little bit of country, a lot of Jimmy Buffett, some Van Morrison. But one of the guitar players was a big John Prine fan. I had never heard it before at all. And he one day he's like, all right, we're going to learn. he sent me like five songs to learn. And was Angel in Montgomery, Please Don't Bury Me, Dear Abby, Flag Decals, and Illegal Smile. And for whatever reason, all those songs just floored me. And so I just started digging hard into John Prine. And still, I mean, I have many, many favorite John Prine songs, but Please Don't Bury Me is one of them. So that's one of them, one reason. It was just a big part of my time at the Tropical Isle. But also during that time when I was playing, learning all this folk rock and some country songs and really stretching out, you know, in my investigation of what is a great song, I'm also learning that there's really not a lot of difference between the songwriting of, say, Fats Domino, I'm Walking, Hello Josephine, or Hank Williams Sr., Hey Good Looking, Jambalaya. Yeah, it really could almost be the same song. And so that was a light that went off of me, is like, how can a song that's traditionally heard one way be played in New Orleans? But to me, pretty much any song can almost be played in New Orleans in a New Orleans manner. And so,
what do you mean by that? Let's explore that a bit before we go. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but explain to me what you mean by any song can be played in a New Orleans manner.
Well, like, hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How about cooking something up with me? I really straighten you. That's kind of country. Hey, good looking, what you got cooking? How about cooking something up with me? You know, you just put the street beat to it. It gets a little funkier, gets a little flinkier. You know, I'm sure probably too blanket of a statement to work for every single song, but there's a lot of common ground there. And Please Don't Bury Me was always one that I thought would really lend itself to that. I never really dealt with it until I started really doing the pre-production for this record. And I really didn't have much of a concept what it would sound like until I gave the guys the song. And of course, these guys are like hardcore New Orleans guys. Nobody had a clue what the song was when I played it for them. Just sat at the piano and played it. Said it's a second line, two beat, street beat. I gave them the chord changes on a piece of music. And we just played it. And they probably thought I wrote it, or they thought it was some cover song they didn't know. But since this Masters of New Orleans canon, they probably thought I wrote it. And it worked.
Yeah.
And so that's another reason. Third reason is, and it's really close to me and more important, it's, you know, the lyrics of song. John Prine's song, and I have no idea why he wrote the song, what kind of motivation he had for it, but Please Don't Bury Me Down in That Cold, Cold Ground. I'd rather have him pass me up, cast me all around, throw my brains in a hurricane, the blind can have my eyes, the deaf can take both my ears if they don't mind the sight. Pretty humorous, but very poignant. I have four friends who have needed organ transplants. Two have had successful, one a liver transplant, one a lung transplant. I still have two friends, one's a musician friend of mine looking for a kidney, and then I have a close friend of mine's daughter who's, I think, 11 or 12. She's looking for kidneys. And if I can do something to bring awareness to the need for organ donors, I can't think of a better song.
Yeah, wow.
So those are the three reasons why that song is important to me.
Oh, that's great. And hopefully your friends that need organ transplants will get them too.
Yes.
It's an interesting time right now in the world as we deal with COVID-19. What's going on in New Orleans? Because you think of this vibrant city with all this music going on, you know, late into the night, and bars and restaurants that are packed, and tourists or even people from from the area, being in the French Quarter. I'm curious about what's going on right now in New Orleans with the fear of COVID-19.
It's really surreal. I've spent a lot of time scrolling through the social medias, looking at pictures and posts. The one that caught me when I woke up this morning was the newspaper had on their feed. They posted, I don't know, it was one of their cars or it was a police car, had a video of driving down Bourbon Street, and it really looked desolate. I think in a matter of a 2-minute video of a car driving down maybe 4 city blocks of Bourbon Street, maybe only 4 pedestrians were shown. Everything was closed. There were no flashing lights. All the doors were shuttered. Just very eerie. And, 12 years on Bourbon Street that I worked there, I never saw that happen. There was always a bar open. Even the ones that were closed, there was always somewhere else to go. And there's nowhere to go right now. It's very surreal. And it's surreal in a way that's very familiar, almost, post-Katrina here. Because our city did shut down. We did have a curfew. We had the bars could not really open. There weren't people here to be. But what's really different during Katrina, the thing that we leaned on every single day is that you could go to a grocery store, you go to Home Depot, you could go to a bar that, that closed. They usually close like 7 or 8 o'clock at night, but you could go to the bar, and that's where you would find out and congregate, find out information about how to navigate through the process of dealing with a city that was broken and flooded and trying to rebuild.
Right.
Well, we're being told we can't do that right now. So like social media is becoming really the way for us to be social. And it's a terrible way to be social, but thank God we have something. Yeah. I mean, there's just nothing about people congregating. It's like, I'm a musician. My whole job, my whole purpose in life is to bring people together. And I can't do it. It's
right.
It's really hard to fathom and deal with. My wife is worried about me. My friends are checking in on me. I'm a little down about it all because this is what I do. I bring people together, and yeah, I'm down, but I don't think I'm like bad off. I'm trying to be productive. I'm cooking every day. Thankfully, to talk to you, I'm taking a break from pressure washing and the fence yesterday. Today I'm working on the back patio. I'm trying to find things that generate instant gratification. I can put some time in and see something, see some progress, see something good. And I'm kind of take care of the exteriors, which in turn I think will lead me to take care of the interiors. I'm working my process. I'm talking to friends who are all in the same boat. It's just very strange times. And I thought I would never experience something like Katrina again. And this is pretty damn close.
Right.
We have electricity. We have the comforts of home. And it's just, that's the bizarre part of it.
Right. It's sort of the opposite, right? It's sort of the opposite in many ways.
It really is. And more people experiencing the same thing. Katrina was very, regionalized. This is all over the world. I'm talking to friends. Norway, right. Talking to friends in Prague and Japan and everybody in Austria, everybody's going through it. We're all in the same boat.
The record doesn't come out till April 17th. You did have some dates lined up in New Orleans. Is the plan once the world gets back together again to tour this record a little bit? I know that you were up northeast way earlier on in the spring, or sorry, in the late winter, but is the plan to tour this record if the world gets back to normal in May and June?
Absolutely. We're trying to keep as many dates on the calendar that are available, that are available to keep. And then trying to reschedule and book up. Tough times about right now is New Orleans, we are going into our busiest time of the year, and with the current hold, we're on a 4-week hold right now that's probably going to turn into an 8-week hold. 20% of my income is just went down the drains, or hopefully maybe I'll get 10 to 15% of that back but I have to wait till October before that happens, 6 months. So in the meantime, trying to reschedule, of course, there's so many other venues that are in the same boat that already have accounted books, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 months out. So there's right. not a lot of open dates for the grab, say in late May, June, to make up for this loss. So as soon as we can get on the road to play some music, oh, I'm ready. I'm ready and excited about it. Jones and Ford, really. Because I am excited about the record, and I'm excited about sharing it with everybody.
Right. I think you're, and truthfully, you're probably excited to put down the power washer, too.
I tell you what, I'm a better piano player than power washer. I can promise you that.
There you go. Thanks so much for taking the time. We really appreciate the record. We really appreciate all that you do for New Orleans music and heritage. And hopefully we'll see you real soon on the road.
Thanks a bunch. I hope that record will put some smiles on people's faces when they need it most.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking the time. And be well, okay?
Great. All the best. Thank you.
What a great conversation with a guy who you can tell is so embedded in the fabric of New Orleans at this point. Sadly, with COVID-19 action hitting everyone, the New Orleans Jazz Festival has been rescheduled for the fall. The good news, though, is that Central City is still scheduled for release April 17th, so you can listen to the record and soak up New Orleans then. For more info, visit johnpapagrow.com. Before we leave you, let's listen to another cutoff of Central City. Here is You Do It.
We'll be right back.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.